Welcome to the Excel Podcast. With its origins in Southwest England, you are invited to join your host, Kevin Sulwood, as he speaks with a variety of personalities, both local and national, and mostly from within the driver training industry. In the various episodes, you will hear about issues of national interest concerned with driver training, along with ideas and advice to help you, whether you are an independent instructor, a member of a franchise, or the owner of a larger driving school. Kevin also asks each guest about what they do for relaxation outside of work. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this latest episode of the Excel podcast. And thank you very much for whenever or wherever you are for tuning in and listening to this. Now, today, I'm very pleased to have with me somebody who is a well-recognized name within the driving industry. If you've ever been anywhere near a Diane Hall course or the Hell of a Way to Pass website, because how do I describe you, Chris? the other face of Hell of a Way to Pass. Yeah. Diane's partner, Chris Allsop. So, Chris, thank you so much for giving up some time to be with us today.
It's a pleasure, Kevin. It's good to be here.
Lovely, thank you. We're doing this on an evening, sort of late September. Put your teeth in. Specifically designed so that this will go out in a week or so's time, just before you and Diane actually come down to Exeter to deliver your course. So it's hopefully it'll give people a little bit of a flavour, those who are coming on the course anyway, and for anybody else. What I like to do with these things with everybody is just get a little bit of a background, first of all, of how you've got to where you are today. Now, I know people can listen to other podcasts where you've been through some of this, but there will be a number of people who won't have listened to those. So maybe if you could just, you know, go through of what it is that shaped you to get you to where you are. And I think there's quite a fascinating story we're going to get from all of this.
This is a long story.
You did say at the start, because I told you I've only written three words down. It'll either be very quick or very long. And I knew it wasn't going to be very quick, because I think this is a fascinating story to listen to.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I will give some background. I'm just going to turn my phone off, because I've got several people coming in to contact me, and turn the volume off because it'll just get in. Yeah, my name's Chris Allsop. I am a psychotherapist. I'm going to go into what the difference of the psychotherapist and other therapists are in a short while. I became a psychotherapist because of my own condition, because in 1999, I had an industrial accident that paralyzed me and put me in a wheelchair. And I was in that wheelchair for 11 years. Now, because I'm in a wheelchair for 11 years, I thought, well, I might use this time effectively. So I thought it might be a good idea to go to university and learn about the things I've been trying to learn about for 25 years. And that is psychotherapy and behavior of human beings. I was a human resources director when I had the accident in a glass factory. I had a horrible accident. I woke up in a coma, and life goes on. I'm not going to tell you too much about that, because that's a story in itself about how to become successful through a terrible situation, but that situation not defining my choices and me as a human being. So we'll open that chapter another day, I think.
Yeah.
So I went to university for 7 years originally, did my degree, did my master's, and started to do other things. But unfortunately, then I had to have operations to repair what had happened to me, because I broke my spine. So they had to rebuild parts of my spine, and there were new operations coming in. And within 7 years, I had 26 operations.
Gosh.
And you had to recover from the operation before the next one. So almost for eight years, 2 months, I was either being in a operation or recovering from a operation. And all these operations were culminated for me to hope be able to walk again. And I met a wonderful man called Mr. Halley, who did this operation from America, came from America to do this brand new operation. And it took another 2 years to walk again.
Gosh.
So I know fear, I know pain, yeah. I know despair. And what the important thing at this venture, Kevin, is just to tell you that I had panic attacks. I had pain seizures on my body. Just think about the next time you get cramp. Don't stand up. Just keep sat down. Go through the pain of the cramp. And you have some idea where my pain was. Yeah. And every time that level of pain came, it caused a panic. Because I was terrified of the pain.
I remember I listened to when you were talking to Mick Knowles about how you tore the tendons in your foot. When you stood up, yeah.
And then so that's another operation. So I was working at CAMHS. Now, for those who don't know what CAMHS is, it's Children and Adolescent Mental Services. It's the local authority's services for mental health for adults within a community. Unfortunately, CAMHS is failing badly in finances and not supporting it. And we have junior people now doing some very serious things.
Oh, right.
I'm so worried about it. I had to leave because I wasn't being supported by my directorship. And I was in court getting my arse kicked, not being able to prepare for a case and just turning up. And because I never even saw the child who was going there for us, but I was told to go. So, you know. You can deal with some of that sometime, but not all the time. So, my values were just getting hurt. And so I eventually left and I met on that journey, I met a wonderful woman. Her name was Diane Hall.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I thought you were struggling for a name.
No. And we hit it off straight away. Yeah. It was just like chemistry. Guys, I'm not going to tell you about how you're falling up with somebody, but instantly the attraction was huge straight away. And we got the same approach to our beliefs in life. We're both therapists. We're both behaviorists. We understand the chemistry and the biology and the choice systems of behavior in human beings. And we just hit it off on all levels. And it was pretty wicked. And that was 8 years ago. Yeah. So Diane said to me, "So Chris, you've left where you've lived to come down here to live with me," which I did. It said, "You would make a wonderful driving instructor if you." So Diane was at a driving school then. I think she just finished the driving school, but she was. And I said, "How would I do that?" I said, "I'll teach you. You get some professional advice," and I did. Wonderful, Lou and Blaine. Sorry.
Right.
Our friends and Lou, bless her. And LDT, is it? LDT? Yeah, LDP, whatever.
LDC.
LDC, thank you.
That's who I trained with.
I'm going to see them tomorrow. I'm going to see Jim and Tony tomorrow. We're going up to their offices in Leeds. So I passed. And I was so offended for you guys. Cannot believe that you do your job in the wonderful way you do it without any advice or structure from behavior at all. And I tell some of these introduction stories in the workshop why the most simplest thing that I can teach you is the most biggest thing in your life, because that's all you'll know from a therapist point of view, and how destructive, and you see it every day when you do an emergency stop or you you get hold of the wheel when they're turning right, third exit, but turn left. And I explain what that is. And they said to me, why don't we know that on day one? Because everybody's going to experience that. And it's dangerous. But now we blame ourselves. But now you just said it's a biological, and you've proven it to us. Yes. I can do that over hundreds of things.
I had that. I've had a girl on her second lesson today. Lovely girl. I'm very responsive to all sorts of things. And I said to her, "We're going to go down this road. We're going to come to some roundabouts." Oh, my God.
Yes.
I'm not expecting you to do this on your own. We're going to talk about it. To cut a long story short, I brought in this stuff about auditory exclusion. Yes. And things like that. But the fact, you know, we'll probably get to a point where I'm talking and you're not hearing a damn thing that I'm saying. And I know that's going to happen, but we'll get through it. And we did, you know, she had a lovely time, really enjoyed it, went away with a smile on her face at the end. But it is these sorts of things, you know, that's just a small part of it, I know, but these sorts of things that we don't know about.
But just that, for you, Kevin, if I may interrupt you, because you say that to her, she now knows she doesn't have to worry about it because you've given it to her. She doesn't have to worry. Mm. I keep telling people about this. Tell people what they're going to feel when they're going to feel it, because then they don't worry about the feeling being bad about them and being judged when you say it's normal.
Mm. Yeah.
Therefore, they don't have issues of worry.
Yeah.
Because you normalize it.
Yeah.
I know that's easy for me to do because it's my own.
Yeah.
But hopefully it resonates with people. When
I think the more we do it, the easier it becomes for us as well.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm coming on the course a couple of weeks' time for the second time because I know there are things from the first one that I wouldn't say I've lapsed with, but there are things that I know I need to hear again to reinforce it.
That would be an honour and a pleasure.
Yeah.
It's life-breaking. It is. It's teaching. Yeah. Yeah. Beyond, and what we try and do at the workshop, we don't expect you to remember all of it. There's no way it's took 30 years of my life to all this stuff. So we get 8 hours in a workshop. So, but what we're trying to do is give a flavour of what we do from this.
Yeah.
And it's probably about 3% of what we do, the workshop.
Yeah.
Maybe four, I don't know. I'm not exactly accurate. It's not a lot because we do so much with our behavioural thing. And we enjoy it all, but to give you a flavour, so we pack a lot in. Really, to tell folks, this is what we are.
Yeah,
this is what we do. We come on board by doing the Driving Test Pro, our program. We're going to work with you. We're going to be here by a telephone for you, and we mean that, Kevin. We don't just say it.
Yeah.
We mean it. We are here for our industry, and to support them. Our industry being driving.
Yeah.
And we have to completely, well, that's psychology. No, driving. We mean it when we say we're here. And every day we get 15 to 30 different approaches to us within our company. Can you help us, Di? Can you help us, Chris? I've got this problem. I've got this student. You've got nowhere to go, but now you have. You've got to talk. You're not on your own. You don't have to be frightened. There is somebody who will give you advice.
Yeah.
Even at that, I had two people last night. I just gave advice to use services. Mm. One was about a behavioural problem locally serviced, and the other one was about a bereavement of a child. And she's got no money, the parents. So I said, go and phone around several churches. You will have a bereavement counsellor in one of those churches. You don't want to pay me money, pay them money, and you pay £15 an hour instead of extortion.
Yeah.
Well, you get what you pay for. So, and you know, she did that, and within half an hour, she's got help for this kid.
Good.
What does it do for me? I don't get anything financially from it, but I do provide the service.
Okay. Great. Right, now mention this thing about just what is a psychotherapist, because I did sort of preempt this, and there was a reason why I was going to ask about this. Now, you have your origins in God's second county.
Yes, really dare you.
And
do you know that button that you said? Don't press this button.
Now, the fact that you do hail from Yorkshire, does any sport come to mind to you?
Sport, yes, rugby.
Oh, I'm right.
A rugby league fan, but
right.
Moreover, I converted about 14 years ago to rugby union, and I'm glad I did because I actually adored it. So in every aspect, I do it, and I follow it religiously. So.
Do you follow cricket at all?
Yes, I do.
Right, I thought you might do from Yorkshire. Mm. The reason, though, because I'm very much, my origins are from West London, so I'm very much a Middlesex man when it comes to cricket. And I'm a hero is the wrong word, but somebody who I admire and respect greatly from growing up, and probably one of the finest captains of the England cricket team ever, was Mike Brearley.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I have got his current book, which is not exactly what I expected it to be, but it's a reflection on his life. And since he retired from cricket, he went and qualified as a psychoanalyst.
Did he? Wow.
And it's a fascinating book. It really is. It's not, there's cricket comes into it every now and then, but there's so many other things. And he is obviously a very incredibly well-read man, because he comes in with all sorts of things from Greek literature and all over the place. So, you know, as I said to you in my email to you, there's psycho this and psycho that, and the thought of Norman Bates and a knife and a shower curtain come to mind. just what is the difference between somebody, a psychoanalyst and a psychotherapist? Now, to my very simplistic view, somebody who analyses something sort of finds out what the problem is.
Quite true.
And a therapist provides the solutions.
You hit the nail on the head, so you didn't need me at all. But there are differences in what...
Yeah, but I also imagine that an analyst must suggest some therapy, and a therapist must analyse the problem as well.
Very much. You are both. But yeah. Not all psychoanalysts are psychotherapists, but all psychotherapists are psychoanalysts.
Right.
I'll take it slow, so I don't want to... Okay, I'm a psychotherapist, and that means that people come and talk to me about issues in their life that they don't know why their life is going so wrong. Now, that can be any range of emotion. It can be social, mental, health, or whatever it is that's causing an issue. Anxiety, depression, social anxiety, disorders like enmeshment disorders and the adjustment disorders, which when I first started, there was like, I had one a year, and now I'm having one a month. So dealing with those kind of issues, I know you don't know these words, so don't worry about it. These are disorders that someone like me has to find within someone's life, because the behavior is telling me there is a structure that's wrong. And I know what it is, but I don't know why it's caused it. Where is it? Where is it? Because I need to know it's formed to help them.
Right.
Okay, that's a therapist approach, but it's also a psychoanalyst approach to get to the information, to find it. Then I will go into the second part of my education, which is a psychotherapist, is how do I rebuild an identity, a process, a behavior, so people can be set free, not healed.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the difference of the two.
Lovely. Thank you. I'm just going to pause there for a moment, because I've just realised that I'm disappearing into the darkness here. So I'm just going to turn a light on. Now I'm getting blinded by one.
Yes, it's blinding me. I can't win, can you? Better.
That's vaguely better, but I don't think there's a lot I can do about it.
It's all right.
Yeah, a bit like a psychoanalyst giving the third degree with the blinding light coming on.
If you put it down, the laptop a little bit, there you go. I'm not blind.
you will answer this question. Thanks for going through that in a way that hopefully most of us can understand.
Send questions.
Yes. If not, I'll put the link on to your email address. But moving on, I know one of the things when I came to the course at Taunton last year or the year before. Probably 2 years ago now.
2 years, I think.
Or was it? No, it wasn't. No, oh, it doesn't matter. was it you?
You have to ask Diane for that. Oh.
Today it's Wednesday, so we must be in.
I know we've got a workshop tomorrow. That just tells me what I'm doing.
And one of the things that you are very knowledgeable about and quite passionate about is the effect that the last few years have had on young people.
Absolutely.
And the levels of anxiety that have sort of gone through the roof, I suppose. But yes. You're better qualified to quantify and explain all of that than I am.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was asked a question, and this was the month before we locked down, the instructors, the world locked down. What's happening to our children today? Because I'm really worried. This is a friend of ours. And I went to bed that night, and I couldn't sleep. It's just one of those kind of question that niggles at you and doesn't leave you alone. And I know, because I've lived a long life, I know that when that happens, then I know my body will not rest until I answer the question. It's just one of those, I know myself.
Yeah.
What I didn't know, it would take me 3 years to answer the question.
Right.
And tens of thousands of research notes to listen to, read, to examine, to qualify, to, oh gosh. It was, I never knew. It was almost like doing a PhD in building structures and understanding what people are trying to get over. But what I wasn't interested in is opinions.
Right.
I want facts around the world from my colleagues around the world, being therapy colleagues. And I knew a lot of them did a lot of work, but no one had put it all together.
Right.
No one. Because it's quite diverse and complex, and it needs a behaviorist to understand what people are writing to make sense of what they're telling us, and then I can apply it into simple is the wrong word, an understanding form for everybody.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's wrapped up in terminology of things. I said this afternoon, says, Chris, when you speak to me, what would a psychologist say? She said this afternoon. I said, you don't want to know. I says, you do want to know. No, you don't want to know. He said, well, tell me. I says, well, I would just say to you that was an introspective hermeneutic autobiographical narrative to all our friendships. And she says, I don't want to know. I told you that. No, and the only thing that means is tell me what you think. That's all that means. So we get lost in the
Be careful what you ask for.
So I'm reading these articles and I'm pulling them apart and I'm rebuilding them and I'm collecting data that applies to the question, what is happening to our children today? So would you like me to tell you what I found?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay, and this is why the workshop is here.
Yes.
Because there's changes in behaviour in children, and if we're not aware of it and we're not knowledgeable about it, you will then not know how to treat them. And then you will have things that you have on Facebook.
Yeah.
They say derogative words. You know, snowflakes. Oh, the mother's booked it. Oh, yes, they can't wipe their own, etc. So we get all these terms coming from it. And actually, what I try and supply to everybody is where it's gone wrong. And if there is a fault, if we want to look at fault and blame, which I don't, but it's definitely not the kids.
Yeah.
And it's understanding why that's happened.
Yeah.
You can only be what you are in life by what you have been taught by that creates the outcome of children.
Yeah.
And we have to look at that content because that's where it kept leading me.
Right.
So let me tell you some of the story and without losing or boring you.
I'll try not to snore too loudly. I'm sure I won't.
When we have to go back about changing in society that changes the dynamics of teaching for parents and children. So we have to go back a little bit. So there is a time just after the war, 1955, which the people came back to the war were very hands off. They were building the communities. They were building everything back together.
Yeah.
And 15 years, they were very much, and kids, what did they do? They went out. No one cared about it, and went to the forest, did climbing. Only time you saw the kids when they were hungry. So they came back to the house for food. It was very hands-off.
Yeah.
Then 15 years later, so now in the 64, we had hands-on and hands-off approach. This is where we started to have still freedom for the kids, but bring structure in for them. You know, let's start and educate ourselves. Get a good job. Yeah, you want a good job. You know, if you get a good job, you can buy your own house. You can be all right. You know, you can start doing that. And we want you to go to college to do that, or work hard at school and get good grades. And that came into that era. And that's fine. That's called hands-on and hands-off behavior in a 15, 16-year cycle. And this happens every 15, 16 years. So now we get to the next one. And now we get into the 85s to 96. So we now have hands-on. Now, this is the change in behavior. So why hands-on? Well, we want to now become hands-on because we want to, we've important or made it important that education is better and a higher standard. And if we can get you educated and get into a great job, and a good job will pay all your debts off at college, and you go to university and you become a doctor, and all that's aspirations of belief in society. And this was very much driven from the parents and the beliefs of the parents and the individuals of the children themselves, who are now the parents of those 17-year-olds that you are driving in the car. So they had hands on. Now we have to look at what happened to them in the time frame of development in society, because they're the children that you're teaching. They're the parents of the children. And we have to look at what parents are doing, what parents believe. So these are hands-on. These are now, this is my age group. My children are 30-odd, yeah? I was this person. So I had hands-on, but society started to change. What happened to society? So now we're in the 90s, 95, 96, 97. There was a debate in society at that time. Mothers should be at home and have the nuclear family and support their children. And half of them, of the generation, and half of society said, no. It's about quality of work. It's about quality time with our kids, because we want to go to work. We want to provide a better income, buy a better house, have the two cars, have the holidays, and actually believing 100% that that would be a good idea for children. What were the findings that came out of that? Were they correct or were they wrong? So we are now, because it's years later, we can look at the findings of it. But before I go to that finding, I want to go to this second finding. All this thing about education and being hands-off caused another issue in society. Divorce rate went through the roof.
Right.
So instead of 20% of divorce, went up to 80% of people who are
married. Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I have charts to show all this. So that happened, and it's undeniable. The data's there. The figures are there. The charts are there to support it. These all come from the government, by the way.
Yeah.
They're not my data, but I've looked at it, I've checked it, I've made sure that it is correct.
So yeah.
It is, and it shows correct, and there's other people been writing upon this information who I follow, and I believe they're good people and good at what they do as their jobs. So, yeah, so I looked at this data, and I thought to myself, well, what happened in society? Well, because divorce rocketed, there were more single-family homes. And we had this condition of that was quite common and funny, really, in society, that we had latchkey kids coming from
school. Yeah.
For those of you who are not old enough to understand what a latchkey is that when you got to the door, there was a piece of string with on it. You pulled the key through the letterbox and you walked at the door. The child then went to the fridge, raided the fridge, and put a video in. Some of you won't know videos, but don't worry about that. And they watched the video until mum came home or dad came home. Their parent were working up to the clock at night.
Yes. Yeah.
These kids were left alone. These are the parents, by the way, of the 17-year-olds. So this is what's now happening. So what else happened? Well, that happened. And who won? Those people who said, no, it's about quality of care. And everybody had, in couples, really went and had single jobs. So now we didn't have one salary, one job supplying the needs of home. We wanted two salaries, and it needed to be because something happened. Inflation rose up to 90%. So that was the important thing. The Thatcher era, the miners, Scargill, interest rates went to 19%, and it needed to go back to work. Those that were families, two parents, went to work. The quality of work, the quality that the children were supposed to give, well, did that happen? In a way, it did. But it wasn't as the argument stated about quality of work.
Right.
Now, this comes from children all over the world, because it didn't just happen in UK. This happened all over the world. But what do UK children say of this time? And this is out now. These are the parents of the 70s. These are the kids grown up now to be the parents. What was that value that they said, the quality of parenting? Well, mum and dad, take us to rugby, take us to piano lessons, take us to ballet, take us to swimming, take us wherever, leave us there. Or if they're there, they're just on their laptops.
Right.
Yeah. Because now everybody's got dual jobs. Mm. Or we have multiple jobs within a job. We used to have one job in a job.
Yeah.
Now we're now responsible for five different things. And you better provide it, because that's why you get paid for a salary.
But yeah.
So where's the quality of work? Then you go home, she's got to do dinner, and then she's got to finish her assignment or a marking. Then she can talk to the kids when she's ready to talk to the kids, not when the kids want to talk to her. So where was the quality?
Mm.
Don't shoot the messenger.
No.
Not my opinion.
No.
Not my opinion. Tens of thousands of opinions of young people that we collected the data from universities and colleges. I'm going to teach you some of those things today. We have all the data to support it. Not my opinion, guys. Mm. Facts. So they felt rejected from parents. Their comment, not me.
Yeah.
It wasn't true connection because they were doing so much. And, you know, that's life. And I'm not here to judge anybody. It's not my right to judge. I don't make a judgment of life. I don't judge anybody. I have no right to do that. Then the single family parents on the other side, and the kids are left alone. And now these kids are doing what mum and dad say. Go to university. Work hard. Do your best. They believe that was great advice. Mm. They honestly believed it. Now they're coming 18, 19, 20, 21, 23. 20. So they're growing up. And now they're at the university. And now we're in 2006, 2007, 2008. What happened in 2008? Subprime margin debacle of the mortgage.
Right, yeah.
Collapse in the world.
Yeah.
If you went to the shop, I don't know, B&Q or wherever, you went in and then you saw granddad or dad.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
But granddad and dad took the jobs because pensions were decimated.
Yes.
Crash. They had no way to live. They had to go back to work. Mm. These millennial kids, Generation X millennial kids, by the way, starts millennial at 18, not at birth. So we clarify millennials, Generation X, Generation Z, when they get to 18 or when they enter into higher education or work. That's when we start.
Yeah.
So most people think it's about birth. It's not. Mm. So at 2000, a millennial will be 18.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just understanding that process is important because we now see how it works out. So remember, now we're 2006, 2007, 2008. They're now growing 23, 24, 25. So now the subprime mortgage debacle, the banks fail, the world crashes, there's no jobs, and interest rate spikes. It's the first generation in society not to take up their place in society.
Right. Yeah.
They had no place, but they were judged. They were judged.
Yeah.
They felt judged. Go. Don't know their own. They would say negative things about them. You know, people put them down. Oh, the millennials. Yeah, the millennials. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. They were maligned all the time.
Yeah.
They were pained, and yet they were growing and trying. Now they owed all this debt.
Yeah.
Because couldn't pay it back. Mm. Excuse me, I'm going to have a drink. They got to pay back the money for the university. Mm. So the 20,000-30,000 in debt, can't get a job, and nobody wants to employ them.
Mm.
These are the parents of the 17.
Yeah.
Right. So now, remember, they were hands-on.
Yeah.
Do you think they trust adults? Everything failed.
Yeah.
Everything failed. Now something started their belief. Now I'm going to teach you something that's absolutely shocking. I'm going to say, please do not shoot the messenger.
Yep.
You can look this online.
Yeah.
You can look at the University of Michigan in 2000. It's a 40-year study. Now, why is this study important? Because the two doctors who did the study spent 40 years of their life doing this study. It's called a longitudinal study. You do one in a lifetime. Because it takes a lifetime.
Yeah.
Now, what we were trying to find out, these wonderful, beautiful behaviorist doctors, two females, great, they're absolutely wonderful people. They spent 40 years. Now, we've always known that in empathy, empathizing about other people's feelings, we know that that is such an important thing about society, gaining information from society, reading other people and acting. We do that through love. We do that through friendships. We gain a lot of information from people by being empathetic and understanding their emotional changes. We knew that 20% of society never become empathetic. We've always known. It's always been like, and forgive me, everybody, if I don't wish to send out to offend anybody, but low catchment areas, council areas, people struggling to education. They're not inclined to do education at all. They're not particularly developing anything. They're living life, good on them. Not a judgment, just life. And 20% of people in life do that. And because of that, they don't get any teaching about empathy, because teaching about empathy is about biological and emotional. Nurture and nature.
Yeah.
The nature is the biology, the nurturing is the teaching.
Yeah.
We need you. Okay. So now, this area that we're looking at now, so I've just lost my thought for a minute. where was I? These children. Now, these adults grow. They're growing. They're having children. But before I get to that, I'll just go back to that study. There was, I think off the top of my head, please forgive me for doing that because I've not looked at it for a week or so. There were 25 universities, 117,000 children, 18 to 25.
Right.
14,000 took the questionnaire. Simple questionnaire, 85 questions. If a person did this is what it means. A, B, C, or D. Different answers. Just choose one. 85 questions, fill it in.
Yeah.
This particularly set the low mark to make sure that we checked the levels properly when we did the data. That's happened before in many designs of experiments. I used to do designs of experiments and confounding variables and VV. So we can do all that, and we do it, but that's another job for another time.
Yeah.
So they set the study, but the shocking effect that came out of the findings of the study actually baffled me. And when I heard it and saw it, I cried. I'm not an emotional man in that way, but it upset me so much because now I know what the problem's going to be. Now, remember, I'm talking about here empathy. Why is it important to be empathetic? And is it an innate system, or is it a Is it a nurturing aspect? We always thought it was an innate system. You're born with it. Were we wrong? Were we wrong? It is a nurturing. Right. This experimental design proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt, and it shocked the psychology world.
Right.
The findings shocked everybody. Remember I said 10% was a low level because they didn't expect anybody to reach it because the relationship, we wanted to get the data program. Mm. You know, that's the information above the 10% that gives us a true understanding of different people. We get different graphs when we do that. Mm. They never thought in a million years that 85% of the people who took the questionnaire would fail it. Do you want me to say that again? That
85% fail.
Less than 10%. Less than 10%. 85% of the people of the 70,000 failed.
Gosh.
And it wasn't set up for failure. it messed the design of the experiment.
Right. Yeah.
Now, let's forgive them for that because they had no way of knowing. Mm. That's shocking.
Yeah.
You're saying that 85 of these people can't empathize. Yeah, I'm exactly saying that. They have no empathy. They do not empathize. And when asked questions about it, we're not bothered.
Yeah.
Well, that's empathy. <They're> not bothered. I don't know. I'm not interested in other people. I'm interested in me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what the biggest search on Google is? I.
Mm.
Me. So what do we get? The hands-on approach meant that mum and dad were running at every situation.
Yes, yeah.
So why do they need empathy if everybody's rushing in and doing something for them? Now, we have a word in psychology that actually proves this aspect, and it's called accommodation. We accommodating our children's needs all the time.
Right.
Now, I'm going to tell you a story about a sandpit. Because we can look at the difference between the sandpit story and what's happening now. And I'm going to show you the extremes of accommodating.
Right.
Which is frightening. All right. When I was 5 years old, what a memory. When I was 5 years old, my mother left me at school. That's the first day that my caregiver, my mom, dad, auntie, uncle, grandma, granddad, family friend, blah, 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 left me and I didn't like it. And I was a bit upset. And then out of the corner of my eye, I saw a sandpit. And I love sandpits. Right. I've always loved sandpits. I'm just an eco-warrior for sandpits. I'm five. And okay, I go over to the sandpit and I can see a boy playing in the pit. And I see a girl playing in the sandpit and she's got a bucket and she keeps filling it up and then turning it inside out and it creates a little sandpit pile. But on my right, this boy had a bucket and it was a castle when you tipped it out. I've never seen anything like that in my life. So I went over to the boy and I pushed him in the chest. He fell over and I took his bucket. Do you know what he did? He came to me, pushed me, he thumped me in the face and took the bucket back. How very daring. It's disgusting behaviour. And I was a bit peeved. I want that bucket.
Yeah.
Well, I could see this little girl. And behind the little girl, there was a shelf and there was some balls on the shelf. So I went around, picked a ball off. And I don't know if you remember this, guys, but back in the day, we used to have power balls.
Yep.
When you let it go, it used to bounce and hit the ceiling. It was one of those. And I'd never seen one. It was just like wickedly all over the place. Well, the girl chuckled and she wanted to play with me. So I then threw the ball to her. We're five. I can't catch a ball on five. So it goes on the floor. Well, when it went on the floor, when Mary threw it to me, I purposely let it go through my hands. And it went over to the boy, to his feet. Then I realised, and how very dare he took the bloody bucket with him. It's supposed to be in the sandpit. So I went over to him, picked the ball up, but he snatched it off me and he played with Mary. Then I saw the bucket. I picked the bucket up, went back to the sandpit, and I was happy as a Larry. Now, why is that important? Because in that story, I created 9 strategies to get what I wanted.
Right. Yeah.
If children don't develop strategies for behavior when they're young, then they'll be too frightened when they're old to deal with strategies they can't deal with because they have no experience of being successful in dealing with them. It is said that a 5-year-old, back in the day, me, by the age of 10, will have 500,000 strategies. 500,000.
Mm.
Now, not big strategies.
No, like,
do I sit next to Mary? Do I sit next to John? Do I have the blue ball? It's selection. It's things that you like. It's things that you want. And you feel better and comfortable about doing it. And these are selective systems. Selective systems define us.
Mm.
Because we make choices. We're all defined by our choices that we make. That's why. Let's go to modern, today's nurseries. What do? You can't argue. They split them up and they say, you put your arm out, and they put their hand down their arm, stroking it. Nice skin, soft skin, good skin. Be nice to one another. Now, I'm not saying that that's wrong, and I'm not saying I want kids to get hurt. That's what I'm not saying. But there is a difference of rushing in and taking the values away from kids to strategize life, to know how to deal with life, or you rush in and divide them, or completely develop and meet their needs when they want you to. Why would people do that? Why would parents do that? Because they're afraid. Why? Not me saying this, they saying this. Millennial parents generally, and please forgive me everybody if you're a millennial parent, but this comes from millennial parents as an understanding how they feel and why they make the reactions that they do. It's not a judgment, it's a fact, it's happening. When I was young, my mum and dad were young, and I was young, there was only one organization that looked into my life if I didn't go to school. You would call the police Bobby, the school Bobby, and I'd get into trouble.
Yep.
There are 11 agencies now making parents accountable.
Yeah.
11 agencies making parents accountable, and they're under pressure. If you think about the life that have happened, so now they rush in. Why? Because they don't want to fail.
Yes.
They don't want to fail their families, don't want to fail the reputation, don't want to hurt their families. And I'll give you an understanding of a child's mother in this situation. So I'm at a sports day and they run. Johnny's 9, he's faster than Mary, and he always wins Mary because he's a faster runner, he's bigger, he's stronger. Mum and dad are on the field with every other mum and dad, and they say to Johnny, well done, you good lad, well done. And Johnny thinks, thanks, I always win anyway, it's natural, okay, so fine. Now his sister, Mary, came last. You might have thought she'd won the Olympics. Because all the mum and dad came around, oh, you special, wonderful girl. You lovely, lovely. You most adorable. You work so hard. He's so proud of what you've done. Now, what they're doing? And people be offended at me saying that. Please don't be. It's not my report. It is Sarah's. It's Mary's. It's Philippa's. It's Daniel's, it's Craig's, and it's every kid I see in therapy. I am a child psychotherapist, and they tell me this. It's not my opinion. It's theirs. What does Mary think of Mum? Chris, it's shameful. It's just an act. When she's out in public, she's just got to pretend that everything's fine. But when we're home and we're out, you know, I can't get her attention, or she's telling me off, or she's screaming at dad.
Okay.
So how do you feel about Mum? I don't know. Do you like Mum? I love Mum. Good, I'm glad about that. Do you like what she does? No. Do you understand why she does? No. How does it make you feel? Afraid. What can we do to help? So I give them answers. I create answers for them. Right. It's my job.
Yeah.
And if there can't be an answer, then we create the answer in them.
Right.
All right. Yeah. So it all depends. So now parents, and how extreme is this protective system? Run in. Got a problem, run in. I'm not saying I want kids to get hurt. I'm not saying that. I am saying stop rushing in.
Yeah.
If you get hurt, all of you, and the hurt hurts you, how long does it take you to get over the hurt? A minute? 5 minutes? 10 minutes? An hour? Half a day? A week? You don't forgive anybody for a month? We need to let kids work out strategies for their own beliefs.
Yeah.
It's what the world is based on. We need to define, they need to define what they believe.
Right, yeah.
They don't, that's the problem. They don't have to believe. And if then mum's not there and daddy's not there, what does little Johnny and Mary do? Oh, they're 17 and 18, they're terrified to be in a car all on their own. And don't you think they're not on their own? Because your dad's got an app on your daughter's phone in the car and the son, and they're following you wherever you go.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And then they're judging you that you're taking twice as long and taking their money off them because they know you're wasting time traveling around. And are they accommodating their kid? There they are. They're making sure that they say, because they're terrified of anything going wrong because it's shit family.
Yeah.
So now we've got accommodation through fear, and they're fearful themselves for failing.
Yeah.
They say they worry. The parents worry all the time. Now we get apps from school. What's your kids doing? And they're sending apps to school and to school saying, do not let my child stand up in English reading out. Let's talk about this accommodation thing. I found out a year ago in our community here that 11 families had moved from a detached three-bedroom house into bungalows for the sole reason that the child has anxiety disorder if she can't see the mum and dad. We're accommodating. My neighbour in Sheffield, her daughter, I said, what do you do with your daughter? I said, I take her to school. We go in the car. Nothing wrong with going in the car, really, is there, taking children to school? But she only lives 4 houses away from the school. Yeah. Why? Because she doesn't like walking past the houses to get to school. Accommodating. Now, you'll have to forgive me, guys. I've told this story, and then there, I've missed so many steps out. I can't give
up. Oh, yeah.
But I want to encourage you. If you want to know truly what this the findings are of this, how to deal with it, what you must do as an answer, which we have all in the workshop, and we want to help you all to become better at what you do. You're great people. I love you all. I really do. I don't just say that. You're my colleagues, and we want to help our colleagues. But you need to understand this. And if you understand it, I can give you all the structures you need to do your job more effectively.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, you'll enjoy the job that you do for the successes that you feel about it. And you know it's not you that's making it. It's just society's behavioural changes.
And it's not the youngsters in the car so much as all of this that's gone on in the past few decades.
Yeah.
We just see, you sort of think, what can you do? I find myself incredibly lucky on one level as to the, again, I don't want to be too sort of generic about this, but the nature of the person who gets in my car, generally speaking, what's, I don't know what the right word to say is. Normal's not the right word, but you know, I can get rapport with virtually everybody who gets in the car. There is one person who I couldn't, and I now know why. He only saw him twice, and on the second time I thought, you're not really enjoying this for whatever reason. And then the next time I went round to the house, and Mum said, oh, he's just came to the door, shook her head, said he's gone off on his bike. I told him he'd got a driving lesson, and he said, as he went off, he just waved at her. He was due to have one this morning, and yeah. I got this message from him saying, I'm not feeling very well. Okay. And then Mum messaged me this afternoon, I've found out he didn't do his lesson. And he doesn't want to learn to drive. It's nothing to do with me. He says he doesn't want to learn to drive. But I had his brother was totally the opposite. You know, took about six lessons with me. But yeah. There's obviously this lad feels that, I don't know. That's the real issue, but it may well be that he doesn't want to feel the competition of having to live up to what his brother's done, or he just, you know, feels that he wants to go off on his own way. But it's, you know, there must be so many like that, and we just don't have the time or resources, us in the car or you as well, to be able to deal with so many of these things that are now manifesting themselves.
True. Yeah. So I mean, this is obviously a huge topic.
Yeah. Oh yes. Yeah.
In a way, it's my life's work. I'm a child psychotherapist at heart. I do all kinds of therapy, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I've done this job a long time. So, you know, I am like you, I can relate to kids. And within 20 minutes, they become my... I suppose I'm classified as a father figure. Or
Ella, this girl this afternoon, we were going along, and she was talking about her mum somebody pulled out in front of us, and I said to her, "What? They don't want to be stuck behind a learner." She said, "Oh, my mum's like that with old people." And I said to her, "What do you classify? Be careful how you answer this. But what do you classify as old?" And she said, "Well, my mum's old." And I said to her, "How old's your mum?" "Well, she's 49. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, "Okay, so." And I said, "Be very careful how you answer this next question. How old do you think I am?" And she was very gracious. Whether she was diplomatic or whether it was a true answer or not, I don't know. But she was 15 years too young anyway. And I said to her, "Thank you very much. We'll leave it there."
But now, just to clarify where I wanted to finish with this, Kevin, is that...
Sorry, I butted in really with all of that.
No, please don't. We often hear the reports on Facebook. I don't have a presence on Facebook. I see what's coming on, but I don't comment. I have an account, but that's all it is. I've never activated. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody who sends me wonderful messages, I don't reply to anybody. You will make a reply and I'll not see it for 5 months. I'm a therapist 12 hours a day, and I have to use my mind to do that. And we've got a wonderful Diane who's really good at communicating to everybody. So please keep that open. Yeah. Please, no one, please be offended. I'm not ignoring anybody. It's just I don't have the time to do it. But I just want to say this. What I see on Facebook is a rhetorical approach in disturbing of children. And it's not their fault.
Yes. Yeah.
The outcome of it all. Mm. It's not their fault. I'm not blaming anybody.
No.
We could go back and look at each part of the story that I told. Society was a problem. The crash was a problem. The effect on that hands-on causing not people to understand other people's point of view is a problem.
Yeah.
The fear that they now fear as parents is a problem. And lots of parents have panic attacks.
Yeah.
Through the World Health Organization, 50% of people on the planet are on some kind of psychotic drug. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, that was 7%.
Yeah.
You tell me. And that's the people come forward.
Yeah.
To be assessed.
Yeah.
we think it's massively high. Now, I'm going to tell you the findings of that. And I'm going to finish with it. 85% of them failed. That was in 2010. In 2023, we now know that 70% of children, possibly, we don't know the exact figures because there's no figures because we've got 40 years to do another study. But 10 years ago, people were reporting that it's getting a lot worse. The empathy is getting a lot worse. You have to think about what empathy is. And if you look at the search on your phones, what is it? What is empathy? What's the lack of empathy? Then you can understand children of today, because the parents haven't got the empathetic values. Therefore, children are not to be empathetic.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're unsympathetic. So if you look at those values, look, I have to be careful about figures because this is going on the net. I don't know if it's 70%. I know that the findings said 60% back in 2010. I know it's got worse.
We've
been reported around the world in schools and colleges, universities, and we know it's gone on 10%, but we don't know really what the figure is. But it's two-thirds. Even at the greatest and least, it's two-thirds of the planet is struggling to empathize. That's a worry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just to finish, these are our new presidents. I'm going to leave you with that.
Thank you very much. So it does something to explain some of the keyboard warrior approach as well.
This
lack of people just are not thinking before they do something.
Now, I want to just say one thing and I'll finish. I'm here to bring answers to people.
Yeah.
Not problems. I know, now you know, what's going wrong. And my data is there for everybody to see. Don't be frightened to ask me.
Yeah.
And I have reported it in a way that other people can take it on board.
Yeah.
The studies that come out of it are massive. Have
them that.
Huge.
Absolutely. Because
if you really want to know how it all formulates and what the answers are for your job, come to a workshop.
To coming back again. My Diane will probably not appreciate this, but my abiding memory of the last time was what you said about what other people think about you is none of your business.
Correct.
That was the one thing that I remember taking away more than anything else. And I thought,
I tell every children that, because every child worried about other people.
Yes, yes.
And every mother is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where they get it from, by the way.
Yeah.
So, it's one of the, I have six things I do with every child. I didn't think I'd have the time, but I just wrote it down, but I won't do it because, if I do come back, we can talk about a lot of the clues and the answers, how to develop children in today's society, because I'm not going to fail at doing my job. I love my job. I love the kids. I want to help them and to be better. And I do. I set kids free from fear. So that's my job. So,
I think what you've just done there is invited yourself back at some time in the future. And I'm definitely accepting the invitation. Because, it'd be good to talk about that in something else rather than go over different things. And that's why, having listened to your talking to Mick Knowles, that I thought we're talking about something different. That his was as valuable. And I'd tell anybody, go and listen to that, to the Kit podcast that you did there, because there was so much there that I really enjoyed listening to. And I've been fascinated listening to you today. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you and Diane in a couple of weeks' time. So, Chris, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin, for the time. All of us. Take care.
Well, that was quite a session with Chris, and you can tell how passionate he is about this issue of the situation with young people these days and the pressures they're under, and the fact that it's not really their fault. The whole thing is a historical thing, and how things have changed through the generations. So I hope you did enjoy that. If you've been to one of Diane and Chris's workshops, you'll have heard Chris talk about this. And then we have a workshop coming up down here in Exeter in a few days' time, less than a week after this was recorded. So I'm looking forward to hearing the story again. I hope that you have enjoyed that and got a taste of what Diane and Chris are working towards. Now, Chris did say that he'd invite himself back to talk about other issues, and so I will certainly be taking him up on that. But if you want to find out more and don't know too much about their work, just go and Google L of a Way to Pass. It's a single L of a Way to Pass. And you'll find their website, and there's a lot of fascinating and really useful information on there, and lots of reviews of people talking about all the different things that they go through. You've probably heard that Diane, or you may have heard, Diane is often called the Happy Tappy Lady, and the tapping technique she has to help people with left and right, but there is so much more that both of them go into. So I'm really grateful to Chris today for giving up his time, and yeah, we'll get him back on sometime in the future to talk about something else. So once again, thanks very much for listening in to this episode, and look forward to you joining me again next time.